On today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny, Jenny shows you how she created a farmhouse buffet and wood butcher block style countertop. What can we do with some old doorknobs and hardware? Ideas for an old outdoor globe lamp. Plus, what can be created out of rustic and rusted French doors. All that and more on today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny.
Ta-da!
Hi.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to Junkin' with Jenny. Here we are, episode number 18. And on today's episode, as you saw, lots of interesting things that we're going to be talking about and sharing with you. Some recent projects that we wrapped up right before the holidays. And we have some interesting stuff to talk about for some upcoming episodes as well. So feel free to leave your comments, your ideas as we go through the episode tonight. And I will keep track of them on my trusty cellular device. And let's weigh in here on the show and read them back as well. So welcome to the program. Hope everybody had a great holiday break. I know we did. I know this is we did have one episode already aired this year.
Oh, we did.
Aired last week, right after the holidays. But I know we're now on to this is technically our first one that we've recorded now in the new year. So here we are. We had a lovely holiday excursion to Wisconsin, as our daughter would call it. And first couple days were great. We had some snow, and you could play in it and go outside.
And they got to sled and build snowmen.
And
it
not,
was great.
Not risk your ears falling off or nose getting too cold, where you have to eventually cut part of it off because of the cold. It was nice. It was really fun. And then the last couple days were risking part of your nose freezing off and your ears getting too cold. And as I always reference to Jenny, the Doogie Howser made for TV movie in, I don't know, it was like probably 94, 95. Anybody else remember this bad Doogie Howser movie? I mean, it wasn't Doogie Howser. It was...
Neil Patrick Harris
played the dad, and it was a true story, and they get stranded in the snow, and shit goes down, and he has to go walk to find help, and they all survive, but they lose, like, fingers and toes and appendages in the process, and it's based on a real story. It's one of those at the end where they have, like, real nice, like piano music, and then they actually go and like pan in on the actual couple who it happened to. They're like, it was a wonderful time. I'm glad Neil Patrick Harris could help us with that show. We love
him. Oh, God. That's terrible.
That's what, I'm not even kidding.
Oh, geez.
That's how it went. And that was like your ABC Sunday night family movie. But it made me, for the rest of my life, keep boots and gloves in my car and blankets when traveling in winter weather, because that shit can happen.
Yeah, I think that may have been the coldest I had been without wind chill.
Yeah.
That was just really, really cold.
It's like -5 or so without wind. Then with wind chill, you get like -20.
Been up there once before in the winter, and it was not that cold. It was like unseasonably warm. I was like, oh, it's not so bad, you guys. Mm-hmm. I totally would come back. And now I'm like, it's fucking cold up there.
It is. Yeah.
Jeez.
I remembered why I don't live there anymore.
No.
Two of our listeners already said, I remember that movie.
Oh, they do.
So
okay.
There you go. So it holds some memories for some folks. Gail and Emmy Powers both say that they saw it. So hey, I'm not alone in watching this. It's like back when you'd watch a movie on television, 80% of the country watched it because there wasn't a gazillion other channels to watch.
I remember disaster movies like that, like plane crashes and stuff. Mm-hmm. I would watch those.
And it would be really quick, too. But like after a major disaster, like a year and a half later, it's like Sunday night movie. And it's based on like the San Andreas earthquake or something. Or the one, what was the one that happened when we were kids? During
San
the World
Series.
San Francisco. Yeah. During the World Series and all that. And it was horribly acted. And they had no budget for any special effects, but that's all you got.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
Okay.
Really was a good time. Okay. Hey, today's creative juice on the program comes to us from Michigan. We are featuring Michigan wines this month on the program. And this is Chateau Chantel, and it's a really cool winery.
Okay.
I've been to it before. It is up on Old Mission Peninsula, which is way up there. The place looks like an old European wine chateau.
Okay.
And it was originally a smaller bed and breakfast with a bit of a winery going on, and then over the years they've expanded it to kind of like an event center or a meeting place, wedding venue, things of that nature. A little more rooms and everything. Really just beautiful place. Even in winter, I just was on their website and I just saw, oh, it's just, they put a cool winter picture up of all the vines like covered in snow and the place covered in snow. And they just do a ton of great wines. And they sent us some wines for being a creative juice. And I had to pick for our first wine of Michigan. And I know there are other ones, and I'm excited about the different varietals we're going to talk about this month. But Riesling is the primary grape up in northern Michigan. And if you're like, Michigan wines? Yes, Michigan wines. Up by Traverse City, Petoskey, lots of good vineyards. I believe it's the 45th parallel. Is that where it's at?
I think so, because I think... Yeah, I think so.
Perfect wine growing country for Riesling grapes, and they make some really world-class wine up there. It's a, like a little unknown place. You don't really think of Michigan as being a wine growing country, but they make some really good ones. So I grabbed the 2016 semi-dry Riesling, and if you go to their website, which is linked up on our website at junkinwithjenny.com, if you're in one of the places where it's legal to ship to you, because there's all those laws, you can even try it for yourself and have it shipped to you. It's getting more and more lax, if you will, or more and more, less and less restrictions, I should say.
Okay.
So every year, every month, it gets a little bit easier to get it out there. But there are a lot of places now you can easily order this. So why don't you pour out your glass and
I'll pour you
some Michigan Riesling from Chateau Chantal. Remember, I always said it, I was like, when I lived up there, everybody always suggested, oh, you have to go to this one. It's like kind of like a castle is how they would describe it, because it's like a European, you know, wine chateau. And I finally got up there, because it's a little bit of a drive up the peninsula to get to this one. And I was just like, wow, this is really cool. And I was there before. I think they did a lot of the expansions.
Okay.
And it was neat then, but I'm sure it's even neater now. I remember back then they would, during the summer months, have like live music out there and just beautiful overlooking Lake Michigan right up on there in the peninsula. It's really a neat place. If you're ever in the state of Michigan and up in that area, do go on a wine tour and definitely check out these guys. So let's do a little tasty taste.
It's very
you know,
nice. Yeah.
It almost is reminiscent, kind of Chardonnay-ish.
A little bit.
If you will. It's not as sweet as you think a lot of Rieslings, but this is a semi-dry, so that kind of puts it more in that category.
But it's not as buttery and strong as a Chardonnay either.
You pear, green apple, some cider in there. It's a good one. Very nice,
very good.
Sipping semi-dry Riesling. So thank you guys for being our creative juice this week as we talk about all the things we've created and attempted to create. I don't think there's anything that we
haven't had any fails lately.
We haven't. Yeah, so that's...
We'll share those too, because those are always fun.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk about our first creation that we've been working on here on the show. And this would be the dining area.
Yes, and we featured the vertical shiplap, but we've got the whole thing put together now.
Go ahead. I was going to say, and as you see on screen right now, if you're watching this, and if you're listening to the podcast, you can watch the video version of this and see all the pictures at junkinwithjenny.com. I'm showing some of the vertical shiplap, I think best ofs, if you will.
Sure.
And that was kind of step one.
Right.
In this room process of getting all of that up. And if you're interested in the process of how we did that, how it was, you know, went from start to finish, some tips, some tricks and things of that nature, listen to the previous episode, episode 17, where we talk about the vertical shiplap.
Yeah. And, you know, our whole goal with this dining room was to make it not formal so that we actually used it other than, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving. We wanted a space where we could sit down and relax and it be, you know, comfortable and not stuffy. So that's what we've been working on.
So we got the vertical shiplap up and the wainscoting and all that. And it looks really nice. I'm going to show you a finished picture here of it. And as you can see, the dining table in this picture and all the shiplap up and the wainscoting and the two color, the contrast, the kind of tealish color up there with
it's
the white.
It's teal. It looks black, but it is a dark teal.
Yeah. And then what we accented the wall with, we found some really neat Because technically this could be somewhat formal depending on how you decor it.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
So why don't you talk about what you did for the decoring or the decorating,
the
or,
decorating.
Or the staging or what's the right word for what I'm talking about?
I would say decorating.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure decoring is a word.
Decoring? That's a new word. We've just invented
okay,
it.
Okay, so I decored it.
She decored the shit out of it.
I had a old windmill tail in the garage that we had found, almost a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
And I just loved it. I kind of had an idea where it was going to go. Got home. No, I was totally off of measurements. It wasn't going to fit there, but I couldn't get rid of it. I just loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually, beyond the tail, we had the whole arm that it hung out on from the propeller part of its, you know. So we took the arm off and just had the tail, and I wanted it in this dining room. And the lettering on it is the same color red as the interior of our front door. So it just worked because our front door is right next to our dining room. And that's not something you would say would be formal. It's very
no.
kind of rustic, industrial, farmhouse, you know, at its core. But I wanted to really showcase it. And I think it really pops against the white vertical shiplap.
And that's a neat thing about,
yeah.
about this style is mixing, I think, some of the formal
uh-huh.
with the rustic industrial. It melds. It's like fusion cuisine. It's mm-hmm. like having a an orange chicken taco.
I guess that would work.
Which is actually a restaurant not far away that
okay.
does like things like that.
I've not had that.
But sometimes it's like they sound so different, but they work lovely together.
You've got to think about it. You know, 100, 150 years ago, some farm wife.
Mm-hmm.
wanted to use her best of what she had, and then the rest she had to make do with.
Sure.
On the farm. And I think that's where you get the farmhouse look, because it's like maybe her, you know, few pieces of nice china are showcased next to the rustic pieces that they had to just make do with,
mm-hmm.
you know, and improvise with. And I think that it's in itself has become a style.
Sure.
So that's what I did. And I do showcase some of my china that I started collecting when I was very young. And in that, you know, case that's standing there. But wanted to just really make this feel more relaxed and comfortable.
She has some really interesting china, actually. She has one where it has clown heads on it.
No.
And it's really strange. It's like
no.
it's like bozo.
Not even.
And I'm not quite sure like what it came from. Or
not even. No.
No.
No. I have a few sets of very old china.
You do?
Very old china. Like
scared to eat off of them china.
I use them because I figure if they've lasted 160
yeah.
years, good power to them. I'm going to use them. And hopefully they last through dinner.
What do you... I mean... That's, I mean, I know like you've had them for so long.
Uh-huh. I've had them since I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
No joke.
And your grandma gave you a lot of them, right? Mm-hmm. As kind of like, here, go collect. It's a collection type thing.
It was a start of my hope chest. And I know
okay.
that's kind of sweet and corny, but that
yeah,
was
a cool thing.
That was what we did. And I started collecting antique dishes when I was a preteen.
Yeah.
And I didn't go crazy with it. I stopped after a couple of, you know, sets mm-hmm. enough to satisfy my thoughts of entertaining as an adult.
Sure.
But anyway, what were you saying?
But I mean, some of the pieces are like Civil War era china.
They
correct?
Are.
And
they are.
And that's the thing. It's kind of a struggle. I mean, I think in anyone's mind of you have these pieces that are in good condition, mm-hmm. and you know the era that they're from, and it's like, well, what do they just sit in this chest? Do they just sit in this hutch?
No.
Or can I use them? They are very breakable and brittle. And I mean, I guess like what's the right, what do you recommend doing with it? And what was your original thought on it? And where did you end up at today with your thoughts on this?
Okay.
Stuff?
My original thought when I was 12, when I got it, was I'm never going to use these because mm-hmm. they are so old and I can hold the cups and the plates up to the light and see through them.
Yeah.
And as an adult now, I realize I'm going to use them. I'm going to use them as often as I can. I honestly know that, you know, you can't put them in the dishwasher. There's no convenience factor at all. And, you know, that's part of the joy that they bring me is hand washing them and drying them and putting them on a drying rack and then putting them away and just, you know, getting to appreciate them piece by piece. And I know maybe that's a little nutso for dishes, but that's something that always has been special to me. But I think it would be a shame to keep them locked away in a cabinet and they never see the light of day because you're afraid to use them when they've survived this long and they're hand painted. Every single flower on every dish.
Is that one of them right there?
Is that, yes, you want to show it?
Grab one, yeah.
Okay.
She actually has them in by the these were hanging on the wall once, weren't they? Or is this is that are they supposed to be in that basket?
They're supposed to be in there.
Okay.
They're supposed to be in there. So
maybe like Bob Barker.
Here we go. Anyway. Very old, hand-painted, and they're blue flowers, which is kind of unusual because you usually see...
I'm not really looking at...
pink flowers. And that's probably all you ever wanted to know about antique dishes, but they're very special to me, and I think it would be a shame to not use them.
I agree. I think that's one of those things where as, you know, as we get older, but as we see things that, you know, our parents had, our grandparents had, and... a lot of it just kind of sat. A lot of it sat and was to never be touched. Never even, like, sometimes, you know, when you get into hutches and things, barely even looked at.
The good china.
Yeah, it's like,
silver.
It's like, well, why don't we use these things and celebrate having them and enjoy them? You know, I mean, I get it, like, if you have, like, half a plate from the Titanic or something, you probably shouldn't put chicken wings on that. But... you know, other stuff, it's not a bad idea to be able to use it.
You never know when your time's up. And the last thing I would want to do is say, you know, when I'm a ghost someday, damn, I wish I would have used my china more.
Or where does it go? I mean, once you're gone, you know, it hopefully, you know, the children want it and keep it and it keeps going down. But hopefully they keep using it, too. Because I think so many people's china, you go into the antique store and it's like, oh, there's somebody's china that they held on to forever and never used. And was hoping that their kids would take it, and God knows
and
where
that's
it goes.
How I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just being able to use the stuff, if it's in usable condition, and it is.
It is.
Yeah.
So I think that's my word of advice on everything antique. If it's usable, use it.
Exactly. I agree. All right. More about what we did here in this room. We just talked about the giant windmill tail.
Yeah.
I got the privilege of trying to get the bolts off the damn windmill tail.
You did good on that.
Which were a very interesting bolt to get off. I don't know that they sell that shape anymore of bolt. but I found
it. It's like a seven-sided bolt.
I don't know what the hell it was. It was very bizarre. I'm like, what is this? But I found a way to get all like 18 of them off so we could have the tail by itself without like having to like blowtorch them off the thing.
And thank goodness for the bullet holes so we could hang it back up.
I was ready to put some more bullet holes in it to get the bolts off. I'm like, well, if all goes down to it, we can always use the shotgun and add a little more character to the windmill tail. But you also did some interesting stuff here, and we're going to show a video in just a minute of how we made this this buffet. We had a smaller buffet that was kind of set up. It was actually just an old little piece of cabinetry that we had used as storage in a previous office. But we wanted a full wall buffet, and we did a lot to put it together. And you'll see in the video step by step how we did it. But what was your thinking on making a full buffet like this? And tell me briefly about kind of the structure of this, why you have it open on some ends, what you did in the middle. What did you put into this? Not necessarily the technical specs, but what's the thought process on it?
Well, I wanted a full-length buffet just for the fact that it always seems like you never have enough counter space when you're trying to serve Thanksgiving dinner and you want to bring it into the dining room. And at least that was the case with our smaller buffet that we had. So I thought I could make a more narrow buffet, but make it the whole length of the room and gain counter space, but yet feel like it's, you know, less intrusive into the room so the chairs can back up more and everything. And I'm not a cabinet maker, so these are actually stock cabinets from your local big box store. Mm-hmm.
But they weren't this color when they came in.
No, they were unfinished. And I have found I love unfinished cabinetry because you can, you know, obviously finish it however you want, but it's very easy to, you know, get the effect that you want. So mm-hmm. by that, I mean the two end cabinets. These were, I originally purchased 5 sets of 30 by 30 cabinets. Mm-hmm. And the ends, I wanted to do something a little different just to break up all the doors. Otherwise, it's just cabinet door after cabinet door. So I took the doors off and I filled the holes and painted them inside and out and made them open shelving on the ends. And
so these are all the same cabinets all the way along. It's just the end ones, the doors have been taken off to make it a more of an open cabinetry.
Right, yeah. Right. And, you know, buffet height is usually around 34 to 36 inches, mm-hmm. give or take. And, you know, these were only 30-inch tall cabinets. So with the countertop, I knew that I still needed to add about 4 inches. So I built them up. I actually built a base out of 2x4s and plywood to raise them up. And then I finished it out with the same trim, base mm-hmm. trim that we have around the rest of the room. But I painted it to match the cabinets, which for those listeners listening to this and not seeing this, they are all a sage green right mm-hmm. now. And I painted the trim in front of the cabinets that same sage green so that it all looked like one piece of furniture.
It does. And it really does look like one piece of furniture. And of course, the other thing you need to do, you can add any sort of hardware you want to kind of match the decor of the room that you're going for.
Right. And, you know, some of my dishes that I have kind of a little bit of a gold tone on the edges. So I kind of wanted to carry that through. And right now, it seems like you can't go wrong with any color hardware. It's all in. Mm-hmm. So I went with the kind of aged brass goldish tones for the cabinetry hardware there. And I even put, we've got some wicker boxes that are lidded. I even put knobs on those for lifting the lid up that matched the hardware on the cabinetry.
You put knobs on the wicker baskets?
I did.
I didn't even know that.
I did because, you know, when you try and grab the lid of the wicker basket, it's okay, but it's easier if there's a knob on it.
I did have a lot of difficulty lifting wicker baskets before the knobs.
I just like
it looks
details.
Nice.
I wanna, Don't give me trouble. I just like things a certain way.
I have to see that. So, I mean, how did you fix it? Was there like a washer on the other side once you got it into the wicker? Or
no.
How did you keep the knob in there?
The screw had a fat enough head that it worked out that it wouldn't
pull through.
It
just kind of dug into the wicker enough to...
Right. Okay. Now, some wicker, you know, if it's a wide enough weave, mm-hmm. you may need a washer to keep it from sure. pulling all the way through. It worked out just fine mm-hmm. with just the way it was. If I find over time it wears down, I may have to add a washer. But part sure. of the reason I wanted these open shelves was to incorporate the wood tone baskets yeah. just to give it even further more a casual sure. feel, because natural elements like that tend to lend more casual than formal.
Sure. And one of the big things that we did on this, you see the countertop there. This is not a countertop that we bought pre-made, pre-cut.
Right.
Made from scratch using some poplar wood. And we actually put it all together, stained it all together, board by board. So it's very much a butcher block style. And it turned out absolutely beautiful. I didn't even know you could do something like this by putting boards together using what was called a crank jig, using pocket holes. But it was a really interesting process. In fact, we have a whole video here showing the details of creating that countertop, because it's kind of a step-by-step thing.
It is. So, it's very approachable, but you do have to go step-by-step.
And the Craig jig's very affordable. I mean, what are you looking at to buy
a beginner set like we
yeah,
have?
Yeah, like a beginner set. Not like my uncle has, but...
$40.
There you go, yeah. $40. We were at my uncle's house over Christmas, and that's a whole other episode coming up of some projects that we did there. He's great into woodworking. He has we were like, oh, we used a Craig jig for this. We're showing him some pictures like, oh, yeah, I have a Craig jig. Look at this. Boom. And he's like the Craig jig, master set of everything. Anyway, that's another episode. This is how we put together our wooden farmhouse countertops. Check it out.
Today, I'm going to show you how to do DIY wooden farmhouse countertops. First, you need some wood. This is the wood we picked up. This is what's going to make up our countertop. We're using poplar for the top piece. But first, you need to get your base piece down to affix that poplar too. And that's what you can just use some of these boards for. Get those affixed into your counter base, into those cabinets. Use some finish nails for that. Got those in there nice and good. Then, on to the next step, laying out your wood. So we laid out the wood. Basically, it's kind of like a big puzzle. You cut it to the specifications you need, get it laid out the way you want. Don't affix anything yet. Then you take it back and you use this little tool. It's a Craig jig. This is where you're going to be using it to make some pocket holes so you can hide those screws really easily. Let me show you how this thing works. Very, very simple. You take your piece of wood, you attach the Craig jig, make your pocket hole right there. You do two right next to each other. Okay, very simple. You got that, and you got that nice little inlet there. That's where you're going to be doing your screws. There's going to go right in there, right into your next piece of wood, hidden below the countertop. So this is the part of the countertop that's going to be facing the bottom. This is the part you're not going to see. And it just pulls all these pieces together real nicely. Look at this. Just you pop it right up, and it's now one piece of wood affixed together. We're going to do this for the entire countertop. So all of the pieces of poplar are going together using the Craig jig through those pocket holes. And as you can see, you end up getting a lot of pocket holes. You just kind of work your way down until you have it all put together into one solid piece. Then from there, you flip it over. So now you have the nice smooth side down. You can see it's looking real nice, all coming together really smooth. Now, of course, you're going to have a slight variation from here and there on some of the wood. So what we're going to do is we're going to fix it down. Then we're going to sand it real nice and evenly. Do a rough sand, then a smoother sand, and get all those small divots out that you might have between the boards. And then wipe it off with a wet rag. This is where we're going to get to the staining portion. Of course, you can do any color you want. Some of you want to keep it exactly how it is. First thing you want to do is get some wood conditioner on there. That wood conditioner is going to help that stain really get into the boards a lot better and give you a much deeper and richer color. It just helps all around. So don't forget to do the wood conditioning step here. After that, then we go into the staining. We use the brush method because it lets us get right up against the wall there without getting it onto the wall. If you have a nice steady hand, you can get it spread real evenly. Now, of course, like we said, color, it's completely up to you. We did one coat of this, and you could stop right there. It looks beautiful, but we wanted it to be a little bit darker to match some of the beams that we have in this room. So we went with a second coat to make it that much darker. Again, the brush method lets us get in there and kind of cut in really easily without having to tape everything off. It's completely up to you how you want to do it. You could use a rag if you want to tape things off as well. And then from there, this is what you got. This beautiful farmhouse style countertop. It's a lot like butcher block, but it's not. It's built by you, affixing those boards together, and it looks beautiful. Saves you a ton of money from having to buy expensive butcher block as well. If you want to see more of our projects, things that we've done, then check out our podcast at junkinwithjenny.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any place podcasts are listed.
And there you go. That's how it was done.
That's how it was done. Yep.
Not a crazy process. Takes a couple tools, but
yeah.
Once you really kind of get going at it, it can really turn into something neat.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very doable. It's a very good beginner project. If you haven't messed with a Craig jig, it's a good, you know, you practice on a couple boards and then you're good to go. It's not very challenging at all.
Yeah, not at all. So there you go. Very approachable project. Do try it if you're feeling ambitious.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised how easy it really is. Mm-hmm. It really is. Let's move on to our next object. Let's take some of the letters from the images and stuff that are sent into us. If you have an object, a space, a place you want some advice on or some tips, go ahead and send it into us on our website at junkinwithjenny.com or send it to me via Facebook through our Facebook page, obviously. And we may use it on a future episode of the program and give you some feedback and advice. So First object that we're going to be talking about tonight is this one. These old antique, these would be kind of French-style doors, correct? Correct? Or how would you describe this?
You know, honestly, they were probably pocket doors.
Okay.
At one point, I'm guessing. There's no hardware on there that tells me that, but I could just see them sliding back and forth into a study or a, you know, sitting room or something like that. They're very old, arched. The glass is arch top. They are actually square doors, but you can tell they are very old. And the hazard of doing the show is that I want about half the things that we have sent in to us, you know, and this is one of them. This, I know exactly what I would do with them.
What would you do with them?
I would actually take the glass and I would spray it to be a mirror and I would hang them on the wall next to my fireplace.
Okay.
Vertically.
Okay.
Because I saw a pair not that long ago and the whole door themselves was arched top.
Yeah.
And I thought about doing that. But I think something like this is just pretty enough to be a piece of wall art. You could, though, however, go ahead and make them into pocket doors and use them as they were intended.
Or, before you step on my idea.
Okay.
Not necessarily pocket doors, but hanging doors, very much like we have behind us here.
Yeah.
But on this sort of style where it's the barn door,
sure,
two of them on the same rail.
Right.
So it does the same thing as a pocket door, but just exposed.
Right.
Create a bigger opening.
Pocket doors are one of those things you want to do when your wall is already open
before
sheetrock, because it's a pain to rip that out and make them pocket doors.
I say cut the wall open, make it a bigger door. Or if you have an area that is...
Make your opening bigger?
Or if you have an area in your house where maybe you have French doors. You know, French doors, you know, became popular again, like in the 90s houses, you started seeing quite a bit of them again. Maybe, you know, you're just not very happy with those 90s style French doors that were put in. But you have that big opening, then if you take them out, something like this could fit that very well. If you do the barn door style, it doesn't have to just be one giant barn door that just goes this way or that way, or just a regular style door like we have behind us. You could do these two, a longer, you know, trail back and forth on top of it to make it pocket style, but exposed pocket style.
And
I think I invented a new thing.
I don't think so.
No, okay.
And they do make sets, the hardware sets, for the specific purpose for having the two doors that open and come together. So you can find that, you know, you don't have to buy two complete barn door kits.
Thought I invented something new.
No, sorry. But I would do the antique mirror look on the windows and hang them on the wall. I know exactly where I'd put them.
I would do the antique mirror or fog on the windows and do the exposed pocket door.
So there's a couple options.
Yeah, some interesting ideas for reusing these things. Would you paint them? Would you leave them as is?
I like them as is, but I can see somebody, you know, saying that doesn't really fit the decor of my home. So
I love the worn look of them.
I do too.
You didn't touch this one, did you?
No, I didn't. This is exactly the way it came out of your parents' garage, and I love it.
Yeah, it was sitting in their garage for a long time. Actually, it came out of I believe it was like a doctor's home down by where the hospital is in my hometown. And it was, they used to have these kind of Victorian-esque style mansions down there. And then as the city, you know, kind of expanded and things changed and neighborhoods changed, a lot of these homes were not so desirable anymore. And some of these homes were actually moved or torn down, unfortunately. And thank goodness, at some point, architectural salvage became a thing.
Yeah.
And people started taking them, and she grabbed this up at some estate sale. But there's so many homes I just think back to in the 90s and the 80s where nobody took anything out of these homes.
Yeah.
You know, they just sat there. It was like, oh, time to demo it. And they just demoed it and nothing was removed.
And that's
just such a shame.
Because of the craftsmanship that went into those.
It's just gold mines. And I'm not even thinking like financially of like you can make a lot of money off of this stuff, but just gold mine of just, I would love to have a just garage of the stuff out of one of these homes to work with for the next 20 years of just, oh, this week I'm going to use this piece that was from this room in this house.
Right.
Because I remember going through one of those homes as a kid and it was like an open house or something. It was for sale. And my parents love to visit open houses. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, I was little, but it was amazing. Just the staircases and the balconies and the woodworking. I mean, it was so ornate and so beautiful. And I just think of some of those homes that I know were just torn, and I don't think much was ever taken out.
I'm glad architectural salvage has taken off.
I'm really glad that people are really into that now and are realizing the value in keeping some of those things. So there's some ideas for that. How on earth do you describe this?
You know, I was not sure what that was at first. I think that is the glass canning lid to a ball jar. Is mm-hmm. that what you think it is?
You know, I think in this piece, it's actually the glass made for that specific piece, but it sure looks like those lids that we got.
It does. It does. We bought some glass canning jar lids to mm-hmm. use actually as beer bottle coasters because mm-hmm. they're the perfect size. And I really, you know, it's hard to tell from this picture how large it is mm-hmm. and what the other side looks like. So there's a lot of questions here.
Mm-hmm. But if you had it, what do you think? Giant coaster for a keg?
I don't think it's that big, is it?
It is. It's pretty big. I mean, what you're seeing there, if you look at the size, I mean, what those lids are, I don't have one right here right now, but we're talking about the circumference of a wine glass.
Okay.
So, and look how many of them there are. You're probably talking, that thing's probably, you know, it's almost bottom of a barrel size, I would say.
Oh, then I would totally put two handles on the edges and it's a tray.
I like the idea. Would it be kind of a trippy tray or tippy tray?
That's part of the question.
Yeah.
I would think that it could lay flat on a table.
Okay.
I'm not too concerned about the things I put on it.
Yeah.
Because I'm using it probably for decorative purposes mm-hmm. and not so much transporting hot food from one room to another. Mm-hmm. But I would kind of like to see it used in a prominent display area.
I would say on this thing, what I would do if I had a large dining table mm-hmm. Or even a buffet or something, someplace where I could get this thing on it, because it looks like it has a fairly low height mm-hmm. to it. What I would do with it is I'd use it as almost a centerpiece where I could put different things on it, but I would light underneath it.
Okay.
With like the LED battery lights.
Sure.
You could do whatever you want. You could do like the little, like the Firefly ones, or just get some LED lights that can go on with the battery that can light this up pretty well. I think it'd be really pretty by itself, just illuminated. Just, it would make a really neat shadow up around the whole room.
Sure.
There's a lot of things I think that could be done with it. But I think you could also end up putting stuff on it seasonally as well, because it is relatively flat, I think, from the looks of this. But you could probably do some seasonal things on top of it, just kind of to accent it and give it a little more height. But I think that lighting below it would give it a really neat, you know, look, just the colors that would come through those, the circles on this.
I'm just not completely confident because I don't know exactly what it is and yeah. how large it is. So it's really a shot in the dark.
If I found it at an antique store, I'd probably buy it.
Yeah, it's neat. Because
it's neat. Yeah.
It's very neat.
It's just, it's a different neat piece. Thank you for sending that in. If you have a piece, an object, a space, a place you want some ideas, some advice on, do send it into us at junkinwithjenny.com or through our Facebook page. We may use it on a future episode here of the program. Okay, you ready for a building? A
okay.
space.
Yes.
This is an outdoor space. This is someone's home. It's kind of a small cottagey style,
sure.
somewhat urban smaller home. And I love the little porch. I mean, it looks like it's been somewhat cared for over the years, but could certainly use a bit of love and a bit of a makeover. They just got this place. They're looking for some ideas on how to landscape it and make it, you know, a cute family kind of starter home.
Well, I think one of the first things that I notice are the trees that have been debranched. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if they... I'm going to say from my frame of reference, crepe myrtles we cut way back in the winter. So mm-hmm. the new growth comes in and blooms.
Sure.
I don't know if these are very large crepe myrtles that have been cut way back or if these are just just trees that are in very poor shape.
Yeah.
That they've had to cut a lot of growth off of. But as close as they are to the house, they only look maybe like a foot or so away from the house. I would want to probably get those out of there because...
it's going to rip your foundation out.
Yeah, you don't want something that large growing that close.
Yeah.
And I would say that would be my first thing. And that would open up that window. You wouldn't have a skeleton of a tree blocking that. Then the other thing that I really notice is, you know, there's four or five steps there going up. It's not a lot of stairs, but I would like to see some kind of decorative handrail going down that. I think that would be really cute. Something that kind of ties into the railing that's on the porch, because there's a nice little, you know, it's a very simple style railing, and I think that could easily be continued down those steps.
Sure.
The other thing that it's just screaming for some landscaping to cover up the foundation, because you can see about a foot and a half worth of exposed, you know, concrete foundation around the perimeter of the house. And you just need some shrubs or some flowering bushes that are going to be able to cover that up. Mm-hmm. And I would think, you know, the pop of color on the door is nice. I don't know that I would even change it. I like it with the tan, but I think maybe carry some kind of character over to the window that's not directly by the door, but the one that's kind of currently obscured by the trees, and maybe add some kind of shutters or something to it, or even just a flower box, maybe in that same blue color would be really cute. Just another pop of color to kind of balance it out.
No, I could see that. I think there's a lot of things you could do with the landscaping on this. The first thing I would do is try and cover up that the base of the house. That's sitting there fairly exposed to the concrete. And there's a lot of, you know, things you could do. I'd probably want something more permanent than just like some flowers or something like that.
Sure.
Some shrubbery that has some room to grow. So I'd find something that kind of fits that nice. Some, what am I thinking of? Is it box? I'm trying.
Boxwoods?
Might be. Mm-hmm. Some boxwood trees, or not trees, but bushes that could go up, give some nice color to it, that stay fairly green throughout the year.
They do. They do. And they're easy to hedge. Once they get larger, you can, you know, give them a flat top and keep it manageable.
Yeah, I would stick with that. Unfortunately, no matter what type of tree these are, I think they've essentially just been overgrown in the wrong spot.
And then you know, I'm guessing they've been cut back too much.
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, yes or no to that, I don't know. They're just going to be a hindrance to the foundation of that home. And just to, I mean, even the roof and the windows and the siding, it's the wrong place for those trees. Whoever planted them there planted them wrong. And that's just something where you go, it sucks you got to pull down a really nice tree, but it's wrong place for it to be.
Yeah.
So you just kind of got to call that for what it is. And there's probably not a whole lot you can do to salvage it, because I'm guessing the roots are already kind of going underneath that house.
I'm guessing so. And, you know, I'm sure they were planted when they were tiny
yeah.
and they were ornamental.
And probably never.
Yeah. You know, 20 years later, they've grown.
I mean, if you're questioning it, I talked to an arborist or somebody who knows what they can do to, if they can move them, I'm all about that. I have a feeling that's not going to be an option here. So you're probably going to find a way to get rid of those things. And then from there, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't mind moving like that one that's right by the window, getting another one. Or if you can move that one, if at all possible, move it out just a bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it's a beautiful tree. And I think that's all the room you really have in this yard for trees. Otherwise, it gets to be kind of overkill and just dark at some point. I think the railing and the banisters and everything on this house, I'd go with like a nice wood, a cedar kind of type trim, where you can just... maybe even like the metal poles, kind of like what we have, where it's kind of a black banister that goes along with it. Easy to put together, you know, fairly easy to install. You're only talking about one real rail length here, so relatively inexpensive at the end of the day, because you're not talking about a ton of it.
You know, you could, if you're going to go for that look, it's not out of the question to paint the whole railing system black and then add a cedar top rail to it and achieve that look using more of what they already have.
And you know, I would probably adjust the colors of the house as well. The door I kind of like. I might adjust, I'm not quite sure exactly what color I'd go with. But the thing I'd really focus on here with a house like this, I don't know what the back looks like, so I don't know if you already have a porch back there, but if this is the only porch on the house, it would be a really nice, relaxing porch. Put two rocking chairs out on there where you could enjoy the evenings in warmer months, but you got the bug problem that comes in.
I would
certainly consider actually screening that in, making it a tiny little screened in porch.
See, and I wouldn't on the front of the house. No, I wouldn't, because that obstructs the view from that picture window too much. And it you're going to have a screen door there to go through before you go through the front door.
Yeah.
I would consider a screened-in porch on the back, but the front of the house, that's not something I would do.
Really?
No.
I would probably go in that. I think I would like that. If this is my space,
okay,
just to be able to be out there at night, because either you have something, a space where you can have it, or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it may not be the perfect aesthetics, but I'm thinking more just of if I want to be able to go out there and enjoy it.
Sure.
That's kind of the direction I'm going.
Well, you can't go wrong either way then. Got one for
you, got two,
and one against it.
There's two different ways to go at it. But I'm wondering if there's a back to that where they could have an option back there for it. It wouldn't be my first choice to put a screen on the front.
Right.
But I just know how much I enjoy being outside in warmer months, and I would love to, if that was my option, to use it.
Sure. Okay.
So there's some ideas on the front of that house. One other object to talk about, this old hanging globe thing.
I like it. I think somebody has it probably outdoors.
Yeah.
And I'm a big, call me weird, but I'm a big proponent of indoor lighting cannot go outdoors, but outdoor lighting can come indoors.
Sure.
So I would clean this up and I would hang this in an entryway.
Okay.
You know, I don't mind it black if you wanted to go for something more modern. Everything seems to be going kind of the satiny, aged-looking brass right now. You could easily spray paint the black portion, which this is essentially a globe with hardware that holds it, you know, to a chain.
Mm-hmm.
And you could spray paint the hardware and the chain in kind of that satiny brass to, you know, lend it more modern or, you know, lighten it up and make it silver, whatever works with your decor. But I would hang it inside in the entryway.
I could see that.
Yeah.
So the top you're going to color up.
Uh-huh. And just clean it up. You know, obviously bugs, I don't know how they do it, but they get into globes, clean them out. But, you know, this is made to be outdoors. I'm assuming since it is outdoors, it's perfectly fine to bring it inside.
Mm-hmm.
You can't obviously take an inside fixture that's not waterproofed outdoors. But there's been a number of times where I have used outdoor fixtures indoors.
Sure.
And they seem to be more affordable anyway. But regardless, I would just clean it up and I would use it just, you know, right in an entryway.
That's an interesting tip that you bring up there about outdoor fixtures as far as using them indoors. Mm-hmm. You're right. There's a lot of times they are cheaper than than just a traditional indoor fixture. So it's a good place to look sometimes. You're like, oh, I'm looking for this fixture. Check the outdoor ones too. You may find something that's a little more industrial, a little more made for outside or what the designer may have thought is an outside look, but it actually fits really well into a lot of today's styles and designs.
We actually recently bought, they were at an antique mall, but I don't think they're antique, a pair of outdoor sconce lights that we're going to paint and use on a fireplace as lighting next to the mantle. And again, outdoor lights coming in, and we'll show that in a future episode.
Yeah, it looks really cool. What I would do with this thing is, I like your idea. I would rust it up. I would do the rust paint. I would do something to give it some look. That modern master stuff that you've used on so many things.
Right.
I would make the top look rusty and worn out, even though it's not. Keep the integrity of it, but give it that sort of a look. Within the globe, obviously this is a glass you're working with if you're going to keep this glass. There are other globes you could probably find that would fit that size. Maybe.
Sure.
It looks pretty specific.
It does. I would be careful with it.
I would just assume you're going to find it.
No.
Measure it. Bring the piece into the store if you're going to look for a different globe. But if this is the globe you're working with, I like the fogginess of it. And what I would do is I would go with, and I don't have it in here. I wish I did. But we recently bought one of the LED lights that looks like a flame.
A flicker flame bulb.
And it is awesome. And it really makes the appearance of a flame going
It's to mimic the old gas lantern look. And so, you know, gas lanterns, I'm not sure how far and wide they were used, but they were very popular in the South. And you can see them on a front porch, and it looks like well, the true gas lanterns have a flame that burns in the lantern. So your front porch light is a flame.
Yeah.
And that look is great, but to run a gas line to your front porch is very expensive.
Not easy. Yeah.
Unless it's already there. Yeah. So to get that look, they've made an LED bulb that looks like a burning light. It's kind of like the battery candles, but on a more
bright,
potent scale.
Yeah.
But they work really well in a fogged globe. If you have a clear globe, you can really see that it's not real at all.
Sure.
But a fogged globe gives...
You would think it was gas.
You wouldn't be able to tell unless you took it apart. So I like that idea. I like the idea of even, you know, if it is clear, that globe, once it's cleaned up...
Even inside.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of the inside
version.
Except we have that. We bought this light going, this is so neat. I'd seen it like kept popping up on Facebook. I don't know why. Yeah. I was like, ooh, you might like this. And I found it. I'm like, okay. I'm going to finally looked into one and I bought one. And they're like $14. And I'm just going to buy one. And I just want to see how real it feels. If it's what the videos make it look like. And it's cool. But we're sitting here going... Well, what do we put it in? You know?
Yeah, none of our fixtures. I mean, we have seated glass on our fixtures.
And they're usually like multiple lights as well.
Right,
it's not just like one bulb. But
so I think we're going to have to buy another one and use them in our nightstand lights because I think that's cool.
It's going to look like Little House on the Prairie going to bed.
Awesome.
It's like, Pa, lit the candles tonight and we're all good. You know?
That's nice.
He's out in the snowstorm right now rescuing Nelly.
Okay.
That's how it's going to work.
Right.
So, but they're neat. They are really neat. I think in a future episode, we'll try and do a review on it. So we can actually show it. We'll put it in your lamp back there. That's a great place for it.
The one that blocks my head. My head totally blocks it. It looks like I'm an angel.
You'll just
I've got
duck.
This glowing behind
Well, it'll look like your head's on fire then because it'll be like...
That'll be good. That's even better.
It'll be lovely.
Okay, we'll stick it in my lamp and we'll see what it looks like.
Would you like another light just on a regular basis? Just your lamp looking like it's a flame?
I need more light in here than that.
You have like windows all here.
What
do you mean?
Don't question me.
What do you mean? I guess I'm asking, what do you mean you need more light in here?
It's a north-facing office with an overhanging porch directly outside.
That's true.
You don't get the natural light
that you
would if these were just exposed to a southern exposure with no porch.
Okay.
There's a difference.
I see what you're saying, because, that does kind of block everything out.
Right.
A little shady.
Don't question me. Yeah, a little shady.
Yeah, a little shady. I fucking hate you.
Shitty. Little shitty.
Well, okay. There you go. I think a lantern light would be... What about just like a... They do make modern lanterns, but they're more like just the LED solids. You can't like really insert them.
I was going to say, are you going to grab my old lantern there? Don't break it. It is old, Tony. There's no sticking a bulb in this.
There's whale oil in the bottom.
That's not whale oil.
Jenny actually secretly trades on the whale oil market.
Keep talking.
And it's weird. Like, there's these weird guys who come to the house.
The only thing going to get harpooned is you. Put my lantern down.
Like, hello, we have whale oil today.
No.
Like, okay. Who's it? Jenny. Okay. For lanterns.
I think that's all we've got for today. I think we're done.
Whale oil. They used to use whale, like...
I know they did.
Wasn't that what was used?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not whale oil anymore.
Do they still use it in any part of the world?
Probably somewhere. I have no idea.
Well, now we know.
I don't think there's enough whales to light the world anymore. I
don't know. All in it after Free Willy. It's kind of like whale oil was not a thing. This is why we do the show.
I know it's why we do the show. Okay.
There you go. All right. Well, we've talked about whale oil somehow. We've mixed in. I was planning on getting a whale oil segment into the show at some point. But
well, I'm glad we checked that off the list.
All good. Okay. That wraps up today's episode of Junkin' with Jenny. Thanks to our creative juice, Chateau. Do you say Chantel or Chantal? What do you
say? Chantel, but I don't know.
Are we cheersing the bottle or?
No, I want some more. I want some more.
Okay. That's what you're doing.
Whale oil.
There you go. Just finish
Thank
it up.
Thank you.
There you go. All right. Until next time. Check out all the videos. Check out all the images from this episode at junkinwithjenny.com. And if you have a space, a place you want some advice on, feel free to send it into us at junkinwithjenny.com. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm going to drink a lot of that whale oil right there.
Right.
I'm Jenny Bruski. Thank you for watching another episode of Junkin' with Jenny.